Chapter 12, A Ride for Life. Jack Bailey did not know what to do or say. He just stood there in the morning light, gazing at Mr. Argent as though to make sure of the miner's words. Finally, he faltered. "You really mean it?"
"Mean it? Of course I do," was the answer. "It's a joke on those rascals. They've had all their trouble for their pains. They've gone off with a set of dummy letters, plans, and other mining information that'll take them several weeks to digest. And they'll waste a lot of time trying to locate the claim. Only they'll be from 50 to 100 miles from it. Oh, they'll be fooled, all right."
Jack experienced a sudden revulsion of feeling. He swayed and seemed about to fall. Dr. Brown caught him. "Hold on, this won't do," the physician exclaimed. "We must get him home." "Why, he's hurt," he cried as he saw the blood on Jack's hands.
"It's just some cuts from the glass I sawed the rope on," the boy murmured.
Already his strength was coming back to him. He was so glad the robbers had not obtained the real letters. It was a clever ruse on the part of the miner. There was a spring not far from the place where Jack had recovered the mail bags, and he was given some water from this. His cuts were also washed and attended to by Dr. Brown. Then, on a spare horse that had been brought along, Jack rode back to Rainbow Bridge, one of the men carrying the mail and express stuff. There was considerable excitement in town when the cavalcade returned. Already preparations were underway for the organization of a posse to hunt the robbers and, if necessary, scour the country for Jack. But he had been found, and the mail and express matter, except the decoy letters, recovered. So the only thing left to do was to set out after the unscrupulous men who had attacked Jack. There was little chance they'd be apprehended, however. They had a start of several hours, and probably had good horses.
"Besides," said Mr. Argent, "they'll very likely head for the supposed location of the mine. It'll take them out of this immediate neighborhood," he chuckled.
"And for a good while, I hope," said Mr. Perkfield.
"Oh, yes, it'll take them a few weeks to find out they've been fooled," the miner said. "But then they may come back again."
"They do well arrest 'em," declared Jed Monty, cracking his stage whip.
As had been expected, the posse could get little trace of the hold-up men. They had disappeared after casting aside the rifled mail pouches. It developed, however, that a few pieces of registered matter and some express stuff had been taken in addition to the bogus letters. The stolen stuff was jewelry, and there was not much chance that it would be recovered. Those to whom it was consigned would have to stand the loss. But when it was considered that nearly all the valuable mail had come through safe, or rather had been recovered, and that Mr. Argent's real letters were still safe, everyone said it was a very lucky outcome indeed. Jack's cuts did not amount to much, and he wanted to ride the route the next day after his experience, but Dr. Brown and his father would not let him. So a substitute was provided, furnishing his own horse, for Jack said Sunjer was too tired to be used without some rest. The pony had made the trip alone over the trail, and it was his appearance at the Watson home which had led to the alarm. A good rest and the knowledge that nothing really serious had happened did much to restore Jack, and on the second day following his experience he was back in the saddle again. His cuts had been well bandaged, so he could use his hands. He was not actually required to ride the express route, but he would not let anyone else do it. "Maybe I'll get a chance to trace those robbers," he said. "I feel sure I'd know at least one of them again, the man who sat on his horse all the while. I'm going to be on the watch for him." The excitement caused by the holdup of the Pony Express soon died away. In Western communities, there's so much going on that interest has soon shifted to newer events. The posse that went out to seek the robbers had no luck in finding them. All traces seemed to disappear after the bags were found in the old mine hole. A man was kept in hiding at that place for nearly a week, ready to give the alarm if the hold-up men returned to get the pouches which they had hidden, but they did not come back. Meanwhile, Jack soon became himself again. His father, too, improved slowly, though he was far from well, and would not be able to ride the trail again for a long time. Of course, Jenny had to hear the whole story of the hold-up from Jack himself, and she sympathized deeply with him.
"Oh, it was just terrible," she exclaimed, in her impulsive but sweet and girlish fashion. "I just can't bear to think of your lying out there all alone in the dark and tied up with ropes."
"Well, it wasn't exactly a picnic," Jack admitted.
"And to think of your cutting yourself on the glass," she went on, as she looked at his hands, one of which she held gently.
"Oh, it might have been worse. If it hadn't been for the glass, I might have lain there a while longer, and in that case I probably would not have found the stolen mail bags. If I'd waited there until the rescuers came, I'd never walked on down the trail."
"Perhaps it was all for the best," Jeannie admitted, "but I do hope nothing like that happens again."
"Same here," exclaimed Jack.
Now, you have mail ready? And then for a time, it was business. For 2 weeks or more, Jack rode the trail back and forth, carrying the mail and the Pony Express matter. He was not again disturbed, and Mr. Perkfield gave orders that, except in case of great necessity, he should not make night trips. Nothing more was seen of the hold-up men, and Mr. Argent heard no news concerning his mining business. Whether or not those who had taken the bogus letters tried to locate the rich claim was not disclosed. But the real letters will come along some day. Any day now, Jack, the miner said. When they do, no one will get him away from me, Jack exclaimed, and he was not boasting, he meant it. And you shall see how he kept his promise. Several more attempts were made on the part of those who wanted Jack's place to supplant him as Pony Express rider. But he had made himself a favorite with the stage drivers as well as with Mr. Perkfield, who said Jack could keep on riding the trail until his father was ready to resume his duties. Several mean little things occurred, which, like the loose planks in the bridge, Jack felt were designed to make trouble for him. But he avoided them, fortunately, and none was as serious as the bridge incident. The author of that remained a mystery, though Jack had his suspicions. Jake Tantrell continued to sneer at our hero. He made several efforts to get Jack's place, even offering to do the work for less money, but his offer was not accepted. Then came an unpleasant season when the fall rain set in. The sun seemed to have forgotten how to shine, and Jack fairly lived in his poncho, the big rubber riding blanket that went over his head, protecting him in the mailbags. "How's the Ponto River, Jack?" asked his father one day when the lad had stopped to speak to the invalid. "Is she rising much with all this water that's fallen?" "Yeah, she's getting pretty high, Dad. Look out for the bridge there. It isn't any too strong, and it may go out with high water." "Oh, I'm not worrying about that. They've strengthened within these last 2 weeks, and I guess it'll hold. Still, the water's high in the mountains, and there's some talk of the Richfield Dam not holding." "Is that so? Well, if that goes out, the folks down below will get a wetting." "That's what they will, but it may hold till it stops raining." The Richfield Dam was a new one, built above the small settlement of that name, on the flats about 3 miles to the northeast. Man, I'm really bad today, fellas and gals. The northeast of the Ponto River. The Richfield River was a branch of the latter and was a turbulent stream, often rising rapidly, for it was confined between steep, high banks. Jack had his talk with his father, vividly recalled to his mind 2 nights later. It was the first time since the holdup that he had been obliged to ride at night, but there was some valuable mail that had been delayed, and that must be put through. The Pony Express lad was on his trip toward Rainbow Ridge from Golden Crossing, and it was dark when he reached the point where the Richfield River branched off from the Ponto, and at the sight which met his eyes, the lad exclaimed, "Say, this certainly is high water. I wonder if the dam's holding." It had rained hard all day. Now it was bedrizzling. "I'm going to take a run down there," Jack decided. "It won't take me 10 minutes, and you can easily make that trip, can't you, Sunger?" The pony whinnied in answer. "I've time enough, anyhow," Jack went on. "I'll just go and take a look at the dam. The water must be 2 feet over it now." He turned off the main trail and was soon approaching the dam. Before he reached it, he could hear the roar of the pent-up water. And when he had a view of the impounded flood, he saw at once that it had approached the danger point. Jack looked critically at the dam. He knew something about such structures and about high water. "I don't believe that dam will last," he argued. "There's too much water pressure on it." Even as Jack spoke, a small portion of the dam near its juncture with the shore gave way, and a large volume of water rushed out. "That's the start," cried the pony rider. "She'll all go in half an hour. I've got to ride down below and warn the Richfield people, otherwise they'll be swept away. I've got to ride and warn them. There's nothing else to do." Jack called to his faithful pony and guided him into the trail that led to Richfield on the flats below. If that volume of water were suddenly to be released through the breaking of the dam, part of the village would be wiped out. If they were warned in time, the populace in the danger zone could take to the hills on either side and escape. "Come on, boy," called Jack to his pony. "It's ride for life, all right."